Big refund, big project, big savings at Menards. Turn your tax refund into your next big project. That patio you've been dreaming of is more affordable than you think when you do it yourself. Get free estimates fast using our landscaping design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on the largest selection of concrete landscaping blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey.
We're back.
What's up, guys?
Happy 2026. We're recording this all the way in 2025, so tell us how it's going over there.
Yeah, I hope November and December are okay. Is the government still shut down?
No.
Someone update us.
Today's episode trigger warnings are explicit sexual content, murder, and human sacrifice.
Oh my gosh. And I have a Spotify comment, and this comes from Allie, and it says, no, I still have all of November and December to deal with, but okay, enjoy any holiday you guys celebrate. I'll see you January, you smutty little rats.
Cute.
It's January.
Thanks.
It's January right now.
We're back.
We're starting the season off with something super, super cool. And if you're here, then you already know. We actually tomorrow are doing an interview with JT Geisinger.
Oh my God, insane.
I know.
Yeah. Our first author interview and our first arc.
I know. Yeah, she sent us an arc of the book we're going to cover today. We're not releasing it until January, but tomorrow we're recording with her to discuss the book. And that's very cool. So thank you, JT Geisinger.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. So this week we're telling Riley all about Blackthorn by JT Geisinger. And how many stars did you guys give it on Goodreads?
Five.
I gave it a 4.5. I really liked it.
Boo.
It was good.
Charlotte. Boo.
That's like a super good rating.
Tomato.
So we meet our female main character, Maven, and she is returning to her spooky hometown of Solstice, Vermont, for the first time in 12 years since her mom died. And that's because her granny just passed away and she's going to the funeral.
Oh, RIP granny.
She's with her daughter, Beatrix, who's freaking out because this town is creepy as fuck and super old-timey. And she's used to living in Manhattan. She's never lived anywhere like this before. So she's like, what the fuck is this place? I just imagine the town from like Hocus Pocus or Halloween Town or something.
Yeah. Ooh. And like coming from a city, I feel like it's a shock.
But what I wouldn't give to live in a town like that.
Yeah. I mean, you say that, but once you get there,
I'd be fine.
Give me the suburbs. I'll thrive.
They're picked up from the train station by the Blackthorn's caretaker, Quentin, and Beatrix is immediately like, this dude looks like a zombie. He's very much described as looking like Frankenstein's monster. He's just huge. He's like a brick.
So there's monsters.
He's not a monster, though. He's a man.
Oh, he's a human?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
He just don't look right.
There's something about him. Maven assures her he's very much not a zombie, but thinks to herself she can totally get why Beatrix would think so. He is very zombie-like. And he also does not speak at all.
Like he's mute?
Yeah, he's never spoken.
What?
Maven has known him since childhood and she can read him really well. So it's almost like he doesn't need to talk because they can kind of communicate. So he's been the caretaker for like forever for the Blackthorns. When they get to the Blackthorn Manor, Beatrix is stunned at the haunted-looking Gothic mansion. They're greeted by Maven's aunts, Esme and Davina, and they very much gave me Hilda and Zelda vibes.
Ooh.
We get some weird conversation between Maven and her aunts that suggests they don't ever marry, and they kind of stick together as Blackthorns. So, like, they're like, men are trash, they're good for one thing, relationships, boo, women, good.
Yeah, agree.
They basically only need men for one thing, which is sex. After dinner, Maven is chilling with her aunts, drinking some wine, when she sees a dark figure standing outside the front gate, and she can tell immediately that it is Ronan Croft. She thinks to herself that you never forget your first love or your worst nightmare.
What could that mean?
I don't know. And then the darkness swallows him and he's gone.
Like he just walks away? Or it's like...
It's like the Homer Simpson like meme where he's going into the bush.
The next day, the Blackthorn girls are headed to the funeral home to see Granny one last time. As Maven looks down at her dead grandma, she thinks if there's an afterlife, Lorinda is definitely kicking ass there because she looks just as fierce as she did when she was alive. She finds a long black feather tucked between her arm and the casket and pulls it out, inspecting it. Then Davina instructs Beatrix to put a pearl-handled pocket knife into the casket for Granny to take with her wherever she is. She also gives her a pouch of coins to pay the ferryman at the River Styx. So they're very woo-woo, very witchy. I
feel like you have to be if you're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then the actual viewing begins, and the room is filled with the townspeople who were too afraid of Lucinda to get close to her while she was alive. Then Becca, Maven's old schoolyard nemesis, walks in. And she doesn't exactly walk in. She more like limps in with an acne-scarred face and a frumpy figure.
Uggo.
Ugly. She spots Maven and immediately points to her, and she's just like, you.
Yeah, get her.
As Becca rushes toward Maven to presumably attack her, she falls and smashes her face to shit on the ground as Aunt Esme smiles.
Good, ugly girl.
Make your face more ugly. Becca stands up and Davina whispers something in her ear, too quiet for Maven to hear, but it causes Becca to run out of the room screaming.
Yeah, I would be like, what'd you say? What'd you say?
Her aunts are scary as fuck.
Yeah, I love them.
Then Maven sees Elijah Croft, Ronan's father. He and Esme look at each other with pure hatred in their eyes. And I guess they have some family beef because generations ago, Megara Blackthorn was hung for witchcraft on the order of Magistrate Levi Croft. And this was like generations and generations and generations ago.
So like they're just always going to hate each other.
Yeah. Esme tells Elijah to kick rocks, but he just demands that she call off her damn birds because they keep attacking him.
Like crows?
Ravens.
Ah!
Like everywhere he goes, he's like, ah!
They're like pecking out his eyes and shit.
That's actually terrifying. That is scary. Birds are scary.
Her aunt is like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And then suddenly a tree outside the window is filled with ravens staring intently at Maven, and she catches a whiff of sulfur. Elijah wheels his wheelchair out of the funeral home, and the rest of the viewing goes off with no more craziness. So he's also in a wheelchair.
Oh, so darn it.
On the drive home, they see a bunch of fire trucks and then a burnt down house. And Maven is like, Auntie, is that Becca's house? And Davina just smiles and is like, I do believe it was.
Oh my God, evil bitch.
That night, while everyone is fast asleep, Maven hears a thump from somewhere in the house. And when she goes to see what's going on, she sees a quick flash of light from the crack under the door to Granny's room. She walks in, but nothing seems out of the ordinary, aside from a book on the ground that looks like it fell down from the shelf. And it's Granny's journal. As she flips through it, she swears she can hear cold laughter throughout the house, but it's gone just as quickly as it arrived. She puts the book away and turns to leave, but sees the door is shut, and she's pretty sure she left it open. Scary.
Yeah, I'd be shitting.
And she goes to open the door, and it won't open.
Yeah, poot right there.
She kicks it, and it finally swings open. She steps into the hall, and out the window on the landing, she can see a dark figure standing at the gates, so she books it outside. It's Ronan Croft, and he's looking as hot as ever with his black hair and his piercing blue eyes. Which, what a combination.
I know.
Honey. She asks why he's here, but he just smiles, and she tells him to get out of here before she shoots him. And also, she hates him. And their banter is very funny. She fucking hates his guts, and he's like, Pookie, come on.
Yeah. Come here, girl. Oh, I love that dynamic.
Where, like, the woman hates the man. Love that.
She fucking hates him.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem fazed and is pretty amused by this exchange. He tells her she doesn't hate him and he doesn't hate her either. She tells him that his father showed up to Granny's viewing today. And if he knows what's good for him, he won't be at the actual funeral. And Ronan is like, why? Are you going to wheel him into traffic? And Maven's like, maybe I will. Like, keep your fucking father away from my granny's funeral. She tells him that they're done here and turns to walk away. But he just says, are we? As he gazes at her mouth. And then he walks out into the darkness.
Also, if he said, are we? Like, if you said that, how could you just walk away after that?
You're like, all right, let's fuck.
I know, come back here.
They haven't seen each other in 12 years, and Ronan can't believe what a beautiful woman she turned into. He's smoking a cigarette and staring into his fireplace, thinking about how they ended all those years ago.
There's a part of me, twisted, selfish, that wants to punish her, force myself into her house, her bed, her body, make her submit, and beg for forgiveness for leaving the way she did. But I keep that dark part of me under control and unbuckle my belt instead. What's he gonna do? Jork it?
Well, he jerks off thinking about her and comes into the fire as he breathes her name.
Comes into the fire?
Yeah, he's standing in front of his fireplace. Like,
he just...
Yeah. Yeah. It says it, like, sizzles when it lands in the fire.
Gross. It's flammable.
He tells himself that he and Maven aren't even close to done. Maven wakes up in the morning with a bloody nose. She goes downstairs to see her aunts cooking breakfast with Beatrix, and her daughter tells her all about the cat she just made friends with. And Maven is like, Luna, she's alive? And Davina's like, yeah, she's only 25.
She's fine.
She's a young cat.
Yeah. And Luna waltzes in, and she does not look old at all. She's soft and silky and as spry as ever.
I was going to say, have you ever touched an old-ass cat?
Yeah. Cats that are, like, over 18 are just, like, bags of bones.
Yeah, it's disgusting. I'm sorry. My apologies if this offends anyone. It's fucking gross. I won't touch a cat.
Esme tells the gang about this reoccurring nightmare she's been having about snakes in the house, and she hasn't been sleeping well, so Davina makes her a nice hot cup of tea. Then Quentin walks in and presents Maven with a butterfly he found, and she's shocked because it's an exotic species that isn't found around here, but she reaches out and it crawls onto her hand. And she's also like an insect scientist.
An entomologist.
Oh, sorry, she's an entomologist.
She studies bugs. I listen to a podcast on entomology.
What podcast are you listening to?
Ologist.
Look at you, smart little nerdy bitch.
Yeah. And then you host this one.
Yeah.
After Maven tells her aunts all about the species, it flaps its wings and flies out of the door. Then the phone rings and they get a call from the funeral home and they have news. They lost Granny's body.
Are you kidding me?
She's gone.
How does that even happen?
I don't know. As Maven gets ready to storm over to the funeral home for answers, the phone rings again. It's Ronan, and he tells her he's the only one in this town that can help her find Lorinda. He assures her that although he had nothing to do with it, he thinks the opportunity to help her is delicious. She hangs up on him and goes to the funeral home to find out what the fuck is going on. But when she gets there, Ronan is already standing outside. He asks her if she remembers how many times they'd been together, and she says, no, fuck off. And he's like, we've been together 8 times.
The time in the greenhouse on top of the bags of soil, twice in my bedroom, once in your bedroom, 3 times in the backseat of my car, and of course the first time where we did it standing up in the alley behind the movie theater after you threw your soda in my face and called me a soulless, spoiled brat with the intellect of a garden slug. That first time in the alley with his hard cock stretching me and his fingers digging into my bottom, his head bent to my neck and his bared teeth pressed into my skin as he fucked me against the wall. I went supernova, helplessly convulsing around him. I gave myself over to the kind of pleasure I now know is exceedingly rare. Fuck him again, girl. Do it.
She refuses to admit anything, so she's like, nope, I don't remember any of that. Maven storms into the funeral home, but finds it completely empty of any employees. Ronan is still following her, and she's like, what the fuck do you want? And he says he simply wants to know if their daughter knows who her real father is.
Bum, bum, bum.
She tells him that he didn't respond in a very fatherly way when she told him she was pregnant all those years ago. And he was like, I was 17. And she tells him she will not be discussing her daughter with him. And he's like, our daughter. And now she's pissed. But then Mr. Anderson, the funeral director, comes running in.
Crazy.
He confesses while they haven't found the body, they did find her clothing on the ground outside of the window of the room they did the viewing in. They go to investigate and see the clothes, but no footprints or anything. And the clothes are folded neatly on the ground, like just in a nice little pile.
I'd be like, my grandma's still alive.
And she's naked?
Where is she?
Also, he tells her that the cameras malfunctioned at the time of the incident, so there's no footage.
Oh, of course.
They investigate the empty casket and Ronan once again asks about meeting their daughter. And Maven is like, I had a miscarriage. My daughter is 9. Do the math. You are not her dad. But he does not believe her. Eventually, Maven leaves with the threat of a lawsuit if they don't figure out what the fuck is happening, and she heads home. But her head is all over the place, so she decides to go for a walk. She winds up at a Mexican restaurant and orders a margarita and some food when, lo and behold, Ronan comes in and sits down with her. He's very persistent.
I would cave so quick.
She tells him to beat it, but he doesn't and asks how mad she would be if he asked her for a hate fuck for old time's sake. But she's like, nope, sorry, I have a fiance back home. She doesn't actually, but she did. She didn't like him that much and broke things off, but Ronan does not have to know that. And the man's name was Ezra.
Okay.
And he's always like calling her and he's like, hey, I hope we can still be friends. And she's like, stop calling me Ezra.
Yuck.
He's like, okay, so where's your ring then? But she deflects and finally the food comes. She slams her margarita but decides against a second one because she doesn't trust herself to be tipsy around Ronan. He reminisces about their past, which she groans at, and then he tells her he has a theory. Even though Granny was 93, she was fit as a fiddle, and her aunts declined an autopsy. Maybe she was never really dead. Maven thinks this is ridiculous and tells him the Blackthorn women never get autopsies. It is against their beliefs. And then he's like, was she embalmed? And she says, no, that also goes against what we believe. And he's like, okay, so she was dead for 6 days at the viewing and she didn't look decomposed at all. And now Maven's like, oh shit. She pays and rushes out of the restaurant to head back to her aunt's. But as she walks out the door, Ronan grabs her arm, pulling her back just as a chunk of concrete falls from outside the building above them and lands right where she was standing. So she almost just got squished to death by concrete.
That'd be my last straw.
He tries to make it an intimate moment, but she reminds him what a shitbag he was to her when they were kids and shuts him down. And then she runs home. As soon as she gets inside, she calls the funeral home and asks how Granny was so fresh if she wasn't embalmed. And he's like, well, we kept her in the fridge. And now Maven is like, okay, well, that makes sense. Sure. They kept her cold.
Ask more questions, though.
Maven finds Beatrix, who tells her about a fox that's been sitting outside the window. And when Maven sees what she's talking about, it's almost like the fox smiles at her and she realizes it's sitting in the same spot Granny always did. Then it turns and runs into the forest. Beatrix tells her mom she's sleepy and wants to take a nap. And Maven's like, sure, sweetie, and pulls out her contact solution. And she removes Beatrix's green contacts, revealing her piercing ice blue eyes.
And what does she tell her daughter, like, why she needs to wear these green contacts? What does she say to her?
So I guess her eyes are so blue that she was getting made fun of because they're almost white. And so Beatrix was the one that was like, can I please wear green contacts so people stop making fun of me?
Oh, she's like a little white walker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next morning, Maven wakes up from a nightmare about being burned at the stake and wakes up with another nosebleed. She heads downstairs where her aunts tell her that the funeral home was shut down. She knows Ronan went to the board of funeral directors and reported them. So also the Crofts are super powerful and rich in this town. They like basically own the town. Beatrix comes in and starts asking about the women in the family and how they all died. And we learn that Granny snapped her neck falling down the stairs and both Jesus. Of her sisters died in freak accidents. So did Maven's mother. And when her mother's body was found, there were wheelchair prints in the dirt. And so everyone in town is suspicious that Elijah Croft had something to do with it. Because remember, yeah. He's in a wheelchair. That's got Maven thinking about the concrete incident. And maybe there's something going on with the women and how they die. She decides she needs to talk to Ronan, so she heads over to his house. It's a modern monstrosity, and it's very much described as like Kim and Kanye's house.
Oh, God.
And as soon as he opens the door, he's like, come in my house. And at this point, it almost seems like Maven may be warming up to him a little bit.
We stare at each other as I will my blood pressure to stay within safe limits and my vagina to behave. If she gets any more excited, I'll have to change my underwear. She's gushing.
Yeah.
She's hella soaked.
He tells her he just wants to be friends, but she keeps saying, fuck no, and she threatens to kill him in his sleep. But he just laughs and is like, wow, that sounds serious. And she's like, yeah, it is. And then he says, you know what else is serious? And then he grabs her face and kisses her.
Oh, yeah.
Maven melts into the kiss and Ronan deepens it until she's trembling, and then he pulls away. She immediately walks out the door and finds herself in town at the courthouse. She pulls herself together and asks the clerk for the death records, where he points her where to go. She gets onto the computer and begins her search of her family. She goes all the way back through her family tree, and every single Blackthorn woman has died a tragic accident except the original Blackthorn. She was executed and hung as being a witch. But there's one other thing she notices. There's only a family lineage of women, no men.
Sick.
What a family.
Yeah.
As she's getting ready to leave, her phone rings. It's Ronan, and he tells her to come back to his house and finish what they started. They get into their usual bickering, and again, he tells her to come back now.
Baby, you haven't been fucked right in years, and we both know it. Now stop being stubborn and get your ass back over here. We've got a lot of unfinished business to sort through.
Yes, sir. I'll do it. I'll do it right away.
He hangs up after that, and on her way home, she stops at the graveyard to see her mom's gravestone when she notices a fox, which she's pretty sure is the same one from previously, with its knowing eyes right by her grandma's open plot. Because remember, granny's body's missing, so it's just a hole in the ground.
I'd say, Grandma, are you that fox?
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
As she watches the fox, she has a feeling that she's not alone, but when she looks around, no one's there, and then the fox is gone. The next couple nights, Ronan is standing outside of the gates of the house, and he just stands there and smokes. He doesn't do anything else.
What are you doing?
He says, I don't want any cigarette butts by my fancy house, so I like to squish them all out here. Yeah.
On the third night, she goes out to meet him and tries to tell him yet again to fuck off and go die somewhere. But he says that he wants what's his and then pulls her through the bars and kisses her through the bars, which they ought to be pretty wide bars if someone's smooching through them.
He just like slams her face against it.
She's like, ah!
She breaks the kiss and he begs her not to run away, but she goes back inside. Once she's in bed, she notices the house is very silent, and then the whispering begins. Her fear quickly turns to irritation and she soon opens her bedroom door, but it stops. And then she feels her nose start gushing blood. She gets a handle on that and then decides that she needs to get out of the house. She gets dressed and starts walking, and somehow she's at Ronan's.
Wow. How did I get here?
Dang it.
He answers the door in nothing but a towel, and she asks him if he meant his apology earlier about the way that he used to treat her as kids. And he says yes.
Also, I'd like to say they were kids. I did some fucked up shit when I was younger that I would never do now, you know?
Yeah, but what he did was pretty fucked up.
Can you just tell me?
No.
It won't ruin anything.
Yeah, it will.
My sigh is heavy. All right, then. He stares at me in all his half-naked glory, a muscle working in his jaw. What does that mean? You agree to be friends? I'd rather be hit by a bus, but I'm up for a hate fuck if you are.
Oh, yeah.
He asks about her fiance, and she says that she broke it off before she got there, so she lied previously about that. He pulls her inside, kissing her, but she stops him, letting him know this is a one-time hate fuck, and then he carries her to bed. Once on the bed, she takes a moment to appreciate how hot he is. He has tattoos, broad chest with dark hair, and then she sees his dick.
Thick and veined, it juts out from between his legs as if it's proud of itself, which it should be. If there were a best in show for penises, his would win.
He climbs over her, they kiss, and then he starts to bite her nipples over her shirt hard. He remembers her loving it, and she still does. He removes her pants, and then he starts eating her out. He stops to admit that he's dreamt of this for years, though, because he's never done it in all the times they hooked up as teenagers.
Teenage boys don't give a fuck about the female satisfaction.
No.
No, they do not.
She has her first orgasm and has a lot of feelings towards him that she's kept buried, and they're starting to resurface. So now she's kind of in her head a little bit about that. But he finishes undressing her and turns her over, settling his weight over her before thrusting inside. He quickly switches positions to her on top. He tells her to take her braid out. She has crazy red hair, but dyes it box dye black and then only braids it. She doesn't do anything else with it. And he's like, take that ugly ass braid out.
Let your long hair flow, girl.
Also, box dyeing your beautiful red hair black, it's a crime.
It's because all of the Blackthorn women have like very distinct red hair.
She didn't want it when she moved away.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
He tells her how beautiful she is as she grinds against him, and then she comes again. He flips her to her stomach now and then pounds into her until he finishes. As they lay there, she reminds him, it's a one-time thing. It's not going to happen again. And he says, yeah, but can you just stay the night? Like, we have this night, just don't ruin it. It's Friday, and there's still no word on finding Granny's missing body. She makes work and school arrangements for her and Beatrix to let them be in town one more week. She takes Beatrix to town to get her hair dye and produce for the aunties. They're vegetarian, too.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
As they shop, she spots Ronan and tries to hurry and pay, but it's too late. He sees them, and the first thing Beatrix says to him is, do I know you?
Are you my dad?
He's like, I had to get some milk and cigarettes, but I'm back.
Maven wants to die, but he says no, but he knows her mom. He stares at Beatrix and tells Maven she's to unblock his phone number or the whole store is going to know who this kid belongs to. She does as he says, but she's obviously pissed. She gets Beatrix back to Quentin, tells him to take her home, and then her phone rings. Ronan wants her back in the store to discuss this now. She does as he says, and he pulls her to the employee lounge, laying into her about leaving the other night. Then he drops the bomb. He called Beatrix's supposed father because she told Ronan she's 9. The math doesn't add up. And her dad is a doctor in California, Dr. Latman, whatever. He tells Maven that he called Dr. Latman, and Dr. Latman has no idea who the fuck Beatrix is. And he doesn't have a kid.
Oh, girl.
She is full on panicking now, and he tells her that he knows Beatrix is his and he wants her in his life. She tells him that she was 17, she was in love with him, and he abandoned her when she got pregnant. And he says, what did you just say? You were in love with me? Because she never said that once.
Oh, cute.
Then he kisses her. It's getting frisky fast. There's fingering and grinding, and then he's shoving into her. The sex is fast and frantic, and when they're finished, he tells her to let him into Beatrix's life or she's going to court, and then he leaves.
All right. I mean, it's his kid.
Yeah, but like, he hasn't done anything.
He didn't know.
He did know, kind of.
So he did know?
She told him that there was a miscarriage or something,
but there wasn't.
Okay, well, so he didn't know.
But he didn't respond well either.
Yeah.
He responded in a way that I would have been like, oh, I feel like I need to fake a miscarriage.
Oh, God. Okay.
She rushes home and decides she's going to use outside help figuring out the missing granny business. She has so much shit going on. She has this man possibly taking her to court. Grandma's dead. Body's missing. There's weird shit going on in the house.
Yeah, she's got a lot. I'd be spiraling.
She pulls up a number for a private investigator, Mr. Walker. She gives him the rundown A to Z, what's going on with Granny, blah, 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 blah. Can you help me? Can I hire you? She says where she's located, and he pauses because that is where Croft Pharmaceuticals is, which is, again, a huge-ass corporation that obviously Ronan's family is in. But she baits Mr. Walker and says, if you're too scared to take the job, I mean, I can find someone else. And he says, I'll be there shortly. I'll call you.
Typical man.
But before he hangs up, he advises digging up 2 to 3 relatives to do post-mortem checks on them to see if they truly died of an accident.
Imagine how yucky those bodies would be.
feel like the majority of them wouldn't be too bad.
They're embalmed, huh?
No, they don't believe in that. The only way you can embalm someone is if you do an autopsy.
So they're just going down fresh?
They go down refrigerated.
They're going down in a refrigerator.
Yeah, they're preserved forever.
They all just get buried in a refrigerator.
Generated power. She dyes her hair, and after her shower, she sees that the black dye did not take and her hair is still red roots and all. She brings the post-mortem accidental death situation to the aunties, but they're unimpressed and unconcerned. She gets the private investigator contacts in her email, reads them, signs them, and then calls Ronan. She wants to talk to him about a question, if he can actually be honest with her for once. He says it depends, but he needs to be honest with her too. He's sick and now she's full on panicking because he admits that it's a genetic disorder. And if Beatrix is his kid, then she might have something. But he says, admit that she's actually mine and maybe I'll tell you what my genetic disorder is, which is so fucked up.
Yeah, that's manipulative as hell.
Maven's pissed, hangs up on him, and now she spends her whole weekend obsessing over every word Ronan has ever spoken to her. On Monday, her worst fear happens. Beatrix acknowledges that the man at the store and the man in the wheelchair at Granny's funeral have the same color eyes as she does, her real eyes. She asks Maven if her dad had pale eyes like that, and Maven says yes. And then Beatrix asks to stop wearing her contacts. Mr. Walker calls and he has news. Anderson's is known for not properly operating, so Granny isn't the first missing body out of that funeral home.
What would you want with a dead body?
Organs. Fucking.
Skin suit.
Of course you'd say this.
They also have a list of citations for the funeral home not only losing bodies previously, but the refrigerators haven't worked in years.
Oh,
but remember, he was like, well, Granny was fresh because she was refrigerated.
What's going on?
Maven calls Ronan immediately and she mentions to him his previous offer for money. He assumes that she's talking about Beatrix, but she says that she needs a small loan. She explains that she wants to exhume a couple of Blackthorn women to check her theory. She then goes into her theory based off of what she's researched. She also says she's pretty sure his family's behind all of the accidental deaths. So she's like, give me money, but also I know you fucking did it.
Yeah, tell him.
He pretty much says you called to ask for money, but you're going to blame me for something that I have no idea what you're fucking talking about. Okay. And he hangs up on her. She paces the room. And when she goes to the window, she sees the fox again in the same spot where Granny used to sit. Then she sees Beatrix walk up to it, pet it as it falls asleep. Ronan calls his father and asks if he had something to do with Elspeth's death, which is Maven's mom. His father says that he would have never killed her. She was different than the other Blackthorn women.
Confused, I frown. His voice sounds tender, then it hits me. Did he have a thing for Maven's mother? A nasty little seed of horror sets down roots inside of my brain and sprouts. If they had a thing for each other, and they consummated that thing, Elspeth could have become pregnant, which means Maven.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit.
He tries to ask his father if they slept together, and when he doesn't answer, he accuses him. He says that Maven is his daughter, and his dad says if he brings this up ever again, he's dead, and hangs up.
Wait a second. So Ronan and Maven, they were fucking, right?
Yeah.
And they're siblings?
They had a kid together. That's why she has flippers.
Incest. That's why she's a little white walker.
At midnight, Maven arrives at Ronan's house. He's disheveled. His house is a wreck. There's broken things everywhere. And she's like, what's going on? He tells her that his friend was over and found something out about the woman that he's seeing. She takes some guesses. Cheating? No. Stole money? No. And then he says that his friend found out him and his lady are half siblings. Maven is shocked and says that if they have kids, they need to get some genetic testing done. And maybe he shouldn't tell the woman, but they for sure cannot be together anymore. After they finish discussing this, he gives her $20,000 and kicks her out.
What would you do if you found out your husband was your half-brother?
Okay, listen, I've thought about it before. Andy and I have been together for like 11 years. I can't leave him. I can't.
The damage is done.
Yeah, we've already like fucked a million times. What more could a few more years do?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like we're having kids, so like fine. There's no like incestual children being made.
Yeah. She calls the cemetery asking to exhume her mom's body. The cemetery worker tells her that's impossible. After the Anderson scandal, they can't do anything to any plot until further notice. He lets her know that the authorities have already begun to dig stuff up to prove all the mishandling of clients that Andersons did over the years. The next day, it's Halloween. Maven agrees to take Beatrix trick-or-treating. As they're waiting in line for one of the haunted houses, Ronan approaches them. He has a date, and it's a slutty Barbie with fake boobs.
How do we know she's slutty? She could be a very nice woman.
That's just what Maven describes her as. She steers Beatrix away, hurt, and then they enter the haunted house. They walk through it, making it to a hall of mirrors, and then Maven sees that she's alone. She calls for her daughter over and over again and tries to leave the Hall of Mirrors multiple times, but runs into distorted images of herself. When she finally finds a way out, she runs into Ronan, saying that she lost Beatrix in there. He enters and comes out a couple minutes later with Beatrix. Maven thanks him and he leaves. The girls get ice cream and go home, but later that night, Beatrix wakes up because the little black-eyed boys are staring at her through the window in the woods.
Nope.
No.
Hell no.
I would yell at my child if they said that.
Don't say that.
I literally, I'd be like, shut the fuck up.
But in the morning, when she mentions that to Beatrix, everyone is confused. Beatrix says that she never had bad dreams last night. And Esme tells all the girls that it's weird because none of them have had bad dreams in forever. But just last week, Esme told all of them that she dreamt about snakes coming into the house. So now Maven's like, did I make that shit up? Like, what the fuck is happening? Later in the day, Maven wanders to the old church where her mom's body was found. Ronan is there and demands that she leaves now. It's in her best interest. As she's walking away, she hears an agonized scream in the distance, and then it stops. When she's back home, the phone rings again. It's a cemetery. They didn't find any one of her family members in their graves. All of their bones, God. Everything is missing. They're just empty boxes.
Mm-mm. Or refrigerators. We don't know.
Yeah.
They hang up and she's reminded of a voicemail that she has from Ezra. She listens and then looks up the article that he mentioned in the voicemail. And he tells her that she'll probably be interested in it. When she reads the article, she gets to the bottom and the pharmaceutical company involved is Croft Pharmaceuticals.
Ah.
Which it's like some random article, like it really doesn't have anything to do with much. But the fact that Ezra just randomly started being like, hey, you should look this up. She didn't say where she's from to him. She didn't say anything about her town, like nothing. And then he just randomly knew.
Yeah, that's weird.
She calls Ezra and he pieces together some information for her that she never pieced together. Croft wanted access to a certain species of bug in the entomology program a couple years ago. Their access got denied and now she's wondering if that was Ronan trying to find her a couple years ago. But then there's all the weird animal stuff going on in town, like the fox, the ravens, the butterfly that isn't native to that area. And she's wondering if they're testing animal subjects. But then she takes it a step further. What if all the missing persons in town are the test subjects?
That would make sense.
She's got some thoughts in her brain. The Blackthorn females send all male offspring to the Crofts in exchange for money.
Oh,
that's crazy.
That is crazy.
She ransacks her mom's room looking for any clues that could help. She finds nothing useful but calls Mr. Walker back and tells him her theory. She thinks the testing is in the old church basement and starts naming everything that's happened since she talked to him yesterday. She tells him Ronan's family history with the mystery illness and maybe all the testing is to help find a cure. He tells her to keep her phone on her. He'll call her back. It's 20 minutes later and he tells her that 15 years ago, the Croft family filed a lien and had the church basement redone, specifically by a company called Safari Large Exotic Animal Closures. So it's a basement full of cages.
Oh, yuck.
She tells Mr. Walker they have to do something about this now. He tells her not without proper procedure. So she continues to fire him and tells him to call for backup if he doesn't hear from her by noon tomorrow. And then she hangs up, holsters her pistol, and leaves.
As she gets to the church, she hears a low, agonizing scream, and she makes her way in. Finding the door to the basement, she goes down, and it's pitch black. She can't see anything, but all she smells is like an animal stench and hears a deep, alarming growl, and she knows down in her bones that it's just not human. Her instincts tell her to get the hell out of there, so she turns to leave, and she literally slips and falls and hits her head and knocks herself out.
Dumb
no,
bitch.
Girl. Literally first to die.
She wakes up in Ronan's bed, confused and disoriented. Edward, he's like the Crofts version of Q, so he's like their everything man, I guess. He found her passed out in the basement and called him right away. She straight up asks him what's in the basement. He tells her it's wolfhounds, but somehow Maven knew the answer was not the truth. It didn't explain the monstrous growling and the anguished cry she heard and why he's been acting so strange. Ronan asks her for a favor. It's not just for him. It's for both of them. He asks her to promise to stay away from him because he's not strong enough to stay away from her. At first, she's taken back by his vulnerability, and then she's like, oh, it's because that bitch you brought to Halloween. You have a girlfriend, don't you?
Fair, fair.
He's like, no, I'm your brother.
And she airs out the whole thing, how like she knows that he requested access to her butterfly collection, but claimed that he didn't know at all where she was. So that was like, she just feels like betrayed. Thinking of how to answer her, he asked her, if he were to tell her that he's been in love with her for as long as he can remember, would she believe him? She immediately says no. So he's like, everything else that I say is meaningless then. And then he just asked her to please take Beatrix and leave.
Stupid. Just say what you need to say. Get it out.
She's completely gagged. And she's like, wait, like you told me that you would hold me hostage if I ever tried to leave. Like, why are you kicking me out? Yeah. What? This isn't how it's supposed to work. Since she's about to leave town and probably never talk to him again, she asks him if he's been kidnapping people and using them as test subjects in the church basement. He's like, what the actual fuck? Like, you literally think the absolute worst of me. Do you really think that's going down in my basement? Okay, I'll show you the basement. Let's go.
When do I find out what the fuck he did to her?
Well, I mean, you did.
What did he do?
She was pregnant and he was like, I don't want to be a son.
Oh.
That's like really bad. So they get back to the basement while she's like alive and conscious. And she doesn't notice. The first thing is she doesn't notice the smell at all. The first time that she went down, it smelled like animal musk and like weird. And she doesn't smell anything. She just smells mold and mildew. And there are 6 empty floor to ceiling medieval looking cages on each side. And as she's looking around playing a little detective, Ronan's like, do you want to do like a cute little truth for truth game? So we find out that she hasn't worn her hair down since they made love because he likes it down. She finds out that his sickness doesn't have a name and that there's no cases outside of his family. So it's most likely a genetic mutation. She doesn't hate him. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
Oh my God. Stop it. I can't think about Heath Ledger right now.
He tells her that when he requested her work, he genuinely had no idea it was her work. Obviously, he's like the head honcho at Croft Pharmaceutical, and he has a team of employees that literally work under him, and his employees were the one that requested her work because it had to do with what they were looking into. He said that if he would have known that she was the person that published it, he would have been there in person to pick it up. It's Ronan's turn to ask the question, and Maven knows what he's going to ask. He asks if Beatrix is his. She ultimately answers by saying she will do anything to protect Beatrix. She would kill to keep her safe. And she's saying this because she doesn't want any type of miscommunication. So if he tries to take her, not even God can keep him safe from her. He nods and he tells her that they have 3 days to leave. He and Beatrix have to be out of Stolsis before the sun sets on the third day. He will let them both go and he won't follow. It will be the end.
But if you're still here, I'll consider it your tactic acceptance that you're mine, and I'll never let you go. Not even if you beg me to. And you will, Maven. Once you know everything, you'll beg me to set you free. But it will be too late. Once I claim you, you're mine forever. His eyes are dark and endless as he repeats my words. Not even God can keep you safe from me. I mean, yeah. But, like, tell her you're her brother. What if Beatrix does a 23andMe down the road? Boom, finds out mom and dad are brother and sister.
It's just a family circle.
Yeah.
He gives her a punishing smooch and then walks off, leaving her there. As she was about to turn to leave, her eyes catch on a glimpse of something wedged in between the seam of the brick on the wall of the cage. She wiggles it out and it's a smooth, perfect claw, which she puts in her purse for safekeeping. On her way out, she also noticed 4 tracks of a wheelchair tire impressions going to and from the basement.
What's that little wheelchair fuck doing down there?
fucking wheelie motherfucker.
You little two-wheel bitch.
She showers, and as she's getting dressed, Auntie E tells her that her friend Ezra is downstairs waiting for her, and she's like, what the fuck?
Remember, Ezra is like, I hope we can still be friends. Call me.
Yeah, what is he doing here? Ezra's sitting there, and he's like, hey, girl, sorry for showing up unannounced. I know we're broken up and stuff, but I thought you'd need support and all since you're fired and everything. And she's like, what? And he's like, oh, yeah, like there was like a team meeting and they just like they said that you were fired effective immediately. So I thought like I could be here so you can cry on my shoulder.
For what? What is she fired for?
I mean, she's been gone for like 2 weeks. I know.
Oh, well.
She tells him, thanks, but no thanks. I do not need your support. You can literally actually leave now. And he's like, this is really awkward, but your aunties invited me to stay this weekend. And I said, yes, sorry.
I'd freak out. I would freak out.
Annoyed, she tells him he can stay, but not in their manner. If he wants to be in this town, he's got to get a hotel or something. Maven tries calling her boss, and she had no answer. She called her boss's boss, no answer. So she goes directly to calling Ronan. She kind of points her finger at him, saying that he was the one who got her fired, but he denies it. And of course, it pisses her off because she won't see him in any other light other than a monster. She gets vulnerable for a moment and she tells him she's tired of them fighting. She just wants peace, but she can't do it alone. And she wants his side of everything because with her speculating everything, it's just making it hell for her. He agrees, but only if it's in person. And they decide they will meet tomorrow at 6 o'clock at Ronan's. Maven and Ezra go to dinner to catch up and it's awkward as fuck because Maven wants absolutely nothing to do with him. He gets a white girl wasted off of red wine and by the end of dinner, Ezra's swaying. He tells her he got fucked up because he's hella nervous since he has something to ask her. He pulls her into a dark alley and she's like, great. Like, I have the worst luck ever. I'm literally probably about to get kidnapped or something. But no, it's worse. He's like, marry me.
No.
He, like, brings out a whole thing of statistics, like, basically saying that, like, they're both smart, they're a great match, you know, match made in heaven, blah, 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 even though he admitted that he doesn't even really love her. And then he hits her where it hurts, and he's like, be so for real right now. Like, do you really think that you can find someone better than me?
It's mean.
Seeing the pain on her face makes him creepily smile, and then his eyes go away from her face to something behind her shoulder, and he turns ghostly white and chokes back a scream and then runs away, not looking back. When Maven turns to look over her shoulder, there's nothing there. She gets home and tucks herself into bed and her phone goes off. It's a text from Ronan saying that if he ever disrespects her like that again, he'll cut out his tongue. And she's like, what the fuck? Like, how does he know Ezra's here?
Careful, Maven. If you keep it up, that smart-ass tone will backfire on you. Meaning what? You'll come over here and give me a spanking? His voice deadly soft, he says. Oh, I'll give you something much more than that. Then disconnects. Oh, come over.
Now that Maven is hot and bothered, she went downstairs to get a glass of whiskey and sees a shadowy figure slip in between the door of her greenhouse. She grabs a steak knife and is ready to confront whoever's trespassing. But have no fear, it's just sexy baby daddy Ronan.
What are you doing here? Maybe I came to give you that spanking you asked for.
Yeah, yeah. The door slams shut and Ronan, who was once across the room from her, is now standing directly in front of her. He presses her about Ezra being here and she presses him about the woman from Halloween. And both sides are just like pouring jealousy right now. Maven said if he's jealous and if he does care what she does and who she's with, to please share with the class on why he suddenly wants her to leave so bad. He looks at her with heat in his eyes and then just says, fuck it.
He grabs me and crushes his mouth into mine, his arms pinning me against his body. He drinks deeply from my mouth, moaning into it when I match his passion. I kiss him back with a mixture of relief and elation that leaves me dizzy. He's so big and masculine, hard everywhere. I'm soft, but we fit together as if we were made for each other. On some deeper level than rational thought, I believe we were.
Through everything they've gone through, Maven knows that even though he doesn't feel the same way, she loves him with her whole heart. But guess what? Pookie Ronan delivered. He looked her dead in the eyes and told her he would burn every single thing down for her. The town, his life, the world, if she asked him to.
He says, I don't care that I'm your brother. I don't care that we have the same dad.
Our bond runs deep.
Deeper than most.
Maven is gagged. She's shocked beyond belief that he genuinely means it. She needs to hear him say it out loud so she knows it's real. So he does. He tells her she's it. It's always been her. and he apologizes for his hand in treating her poorly, and she apologizes to him for being such a raging bitch. And then they smooch. He throws her on the greenhouse table.
My heart pounding. I break away and whisper, "They'll hear us.
Let them."
Oh my gosh. Do they want to hear you?
Just as she was naked beneath him and had his dick in her hands, he stopped. He tells her, "I am not who you think I am." But she won't hear one more second of it. She tells him what he is hers. They belong to each other and nothing else matters.
Your blood.
So he looks her dead in the eyes and he says, "Nothing else matters."
He says, "I've done all I can do."
He said, "Well, I tried."
Well, yeah. Ugh. Just won't try anymore. Staring into his eyes, I whisper, "Nothing else matters. Now fuck me. Take what's yours."
Step bro, I'm stuck.
Half bro.
It's not even step. It'd be better if it was step. Like an animal running with its mate, he bites me on the neck and growls against my skin as he pumps his hips, fucking me with ruthless strokes and pulling my hair.
He's giving her the sibling special 5,000 and she's loving it.
The sibling special 5,000 is what she just said.
He's putting in work.
Hannah.
His dad walks in and is like, "Oh my God, I just love seeing my kids getting along so well."
Yay!
Now, why don't you push my wheelchair?
His cock swells inside me, growing harder and longer than before, until it seems I won't be able to take more of the massive organ. But I do, groaning in pleasure as he fucks my wet hole. Wet hole. That's not my favorite.
As her orgasm is building, Maven has an intense, foreboding feeling, like down to her bones. But then she feels Ronan come, and it draws out the most powerful orgasm of her entire existence. Things get intense fast. He's coming, but he's still fucking the life out of her. There's fire embers flickering around them. He comes again, and this time her scream shatters the air. Ronan screams into the sky, and he's choking her while they're both literally still coming. And semen's just pouring out of her. She looks up at Ronan and he has horns, like, and he has horns and batty wings and that like emit smoke and sparks. And at the end of each wing is a long talon.
What the fuck?
Surprise!
I thought this was a human bug. What? What is he, a bird?
He just, flies away.
What the fuck?
She tries screaming, but he's still choking the fuck out of her so she can't get anything out. And then he flips her over.
And she... Get your talons away from me. He pushes my thighs apart, fondling my bottom and spreading his cum all around, his fingers roughly probing the tender butt of my ass. When he slides two fingers inside of me and starts to work them around in a circle, I know he's preparing me to take his cock.
He's going to pound town, and she orgasms again. He keeps repeating the word Mayez over and over and over again, and the sigils on his wrist glow red.
Heavy testicles slap against my bare pussy with each snap of his hips, sending waves of pleasure throughout my body, dulling the pain of my stretched anus. Anus, what is that doing here? He reaches between my legs and tugs on my engorged clit, tweaking and stroking it until I'm surging nearer to another orgasm, my ass stuffed with his cock and my mouth with his fingers. Tugs on my engorged clit.
And now he's licking his cum up from literally starting at her ankles all the way up to her pussy.
He slides two thick fingers inside my pussy, fits his mouth over my aching asshole, and sucks his sperm out of me. Making lavicious noises of pleasure as he swallows over and over again, slurping his own cum, shoving his tongue deep inside my orifice to get every drop.
She orgasms once more just by that alone, and he says, "Mayes," again. Her knowing a thing or two about Latin, she knows he's been chanting, "You're mine," over and over, and then she loses consciousness.
She's not good at staying awake.
Or he chugged the soul out of her ass.
It's true. Maven woke up in her bed with Auntie E over her being like, "Girl, wake up. You were having a nightmare and screaming bloody murder. You have a high fever. Don't get up." She asks where Beatrix is, and Auntie tells her she's at the greenhouse with Q. The winds were crazy last night and blew the door open, knocking the pots around. They leave her to rest, and immediately she checks her phone, and she's like, there's no way that I just imagined that entire thing. But there was no text or call in her phone from Ronan.
Well, is your ass on fire right now? Because, like...
Literally.
She also notices that her text from Ezra is missing, along with her calls from work. And at this point, she's questioning her sanity. She asks her aunties if Ezra came by this morning, and they're like, who? We don't know who you're talking about. They tell her to drink the tea that they made for her, and it'll make her feel better soon. So she does in one sitting, and it makes her auntie smile.
What the hell?
And when she gets up, she looks at herself in the mirror, and she basically looks like a borderline corpse that's deathly ill. She's questioning everything. She goes to her purse where she put the talon that she had that she found in the basement, and it's no longer there. Her aunties do a house call to one of the guy Auntie D is fucking, and it's a doctor, obviously. And she tells the guy about her dreams and the paranormal. Paranoia, the dizziness, headaches, and fever. And since her fever has apparently broke, he deems it a virus of some sort. When he's gone, she hears a buzzing noise and an intense swarm of bees, and it makes her skin crawl, and she instantly feels uneasy. She catches herself in the mirror, and there's black flies covering her entire body, and her eyes are white and glossed over, and she looks like something that's died a long time ago.
What the fuck?
Imagine that being one of your hallucinations. I would...
I'd smash my face into the glass, I feel like. Out of just like a reflex. Yeah. I'm like, ah!
She's like full-blown hallucinating at this point that she's a living corpse, and she goes to run out of the room, and she runs straight into Auntie E. Suddenly, the buzzing stops, and when she looks down at her hands, there's not a fly in sight. As her aunties are ready to go to church, something inside her nags that she must go to. At the end of service, they take Bea home, but Maven sticks behind. Father O'Brien comes up to her and tells her that she can still be saved. It's not too late for her. If she were to repent for her sins, she can still be saved. He tells her that there's a war on her soul right now, and soon she will have to choose a side. She turns to leave, but he's next to her in an instant, pressing something into her hand and holding onto her wrist hard. He tells her the old serpent is stirring and spreading plague throughout her blood like poison. Soon he will fulfill the prophecy and claim who is promised to him, and the queen who will rule by his side in hell. But she can be saved if she repents.
Oh, get away from me.
In her hands, she found a wooden rosary. And some weird shit goes on at the church after this. Like, the cross from the wall comes flying down, and the Virgin Mary statue, like, turns its head and looks straight at Maven. She hears the building starts whispering, and then it turns into a scream in Latin.
No.
She gets home and immediately starts packing her bags, and she's like, fuck this. I am out of this crazy-ass town. She calls Bea and tells her that they're moving back to Manhattan, and Beatrix is like, what? You pulled me out of school last week when I said I didn't want to go back. You said it was okay and that we could move here, and you even sent a letter to my principal. But Maven has absolutely no memory of this. Once she's done packing their things, she goes to get Beatrix to leave, but the whole entire house is empty. She has a strong feeling of impending doom, and she's outside frantically searching for Beatrix. She sees the red fox, and it's almost like it's pleading with her to follow it. She's lured deep into the woods, like so deep where she doesn't know which direction is which anymore, and a distinct smell stops her in her tracks. It's the same smell that she smelled when she was in the greenhouse: coal, animal musk, and charred wood. A shadow creature falls over her, and it blocks her entire view, and it smells strongly of brimstone. Before she could do anything, she sees wings and then smoke, and then the form solidifies, and the next thing that she knows, she's in the creature's arms, and it's launched into the sky.
Oh my god.
The creature flies her through the mountains to its cave and gently puts her down, and when she looks up at the creature, she's stunned to see familiar pale blue eyes.
Is it her brother or her dad?
When she looks lower, she gets a jump scare because she finds a huge raging boner.
Its thick penis is ridged all the way up the shaft, topped with a swollen red crown that glistens with clear fluid at the slit. A wisp of smoke rises from the fluid.
Oh, okay. I just thought it was funny that its dick was smoking.
Yeah.
She tries to fight it off, and the creature almost seems amused, like it's basically purring. It takes its talon and slices her clothes right off, and she thought it was just gonna fuck her right away and take its pleasure from her. But no, no. It's the other way around. The creature spreads her legs open and then just starts eating it, and it's fucking her with its monster tongue.
Huh.
At first, she's like, ah, scary. But then she's like, ah, so scary. Oh my God. She holds the creature's horns like handlebars as it's eating her out, and she's grinding down on its face. She can't help it. She wants this monster dick. And next thing she knows, she's saying, Ronan, please. Finally, she gets the monster dick, and she's getting her shit rocked.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
He says, you're mine, and she feels fangs against her neck and then him drinking her. She has a crazy orgasm, but then she wakes alone in her bed with her hands down her pants.
Okay. What the fuck?
When she grabs her phone, she has 6 missed calls from Ronan, and the date should be Sunday, only it's Tuesday, meaning that she lost 2 days. Her whole room is no longer packed. It's exactly how it was previously. She even calls her old job, and they're like, we don't know who you are. We don't know who Ezra is. Like, girl, you're fucking crazy.
What?
Yeah.
Her phone drops to the ground, and a second later, it starts ringing. She picks it up, and it's Ronan on the other end, pleading to know if she's okay. She's like, wait, do you remember me? And Pookie's hella worried about her, but she's reluctant to say what's going on because she's like, you are going to think that I'm batshit crazy. As they're talking, she starts having just a mentee bee. She's spewing out, maybe she's the dead one. Like, were there even dead bodies? Like, just a breakdown at this point. Because she has a whole break in reality. She doesn't know what's real, what's up, what's down. Because, like...
Yeah, how would you?
She knows that while she has him on the phone, she needs to tell him how she feels. And she declares her undying love for him. He tells her that he loves her too, and that he's coming right now to get her and Beatrix. Needing to get Beatrix, she hangs up on Ronan, and she sees something inky slither across her walls, stretching to fill her whole entire ceiling, and it's a sneaky snake.
Oh.
She closes her eyes, and when she opens them again, it's gone. She sees her reflection in the mirror, and it's completely back to normal, except she has a rosary around her neck and 2 small puncture wounds on her throat. Mid-spiral, she hears Beatrix cry, and that springs her into action. So, in mythology, pomegranates are tied to the underworld because of Hades and Persephone. And when she goes downstairs to her kitchen, her entire kitchen table is filled with pomegranates. And I think that's like a kind of like a symbol saying that her house is hell.
Oh, okay.
She gets into the cellar where she heard the cries, and it smells like herbs that would be used in sacrifices, when suddenly she's kicked down and slams her head into the ground. She feels her limbs being locked into something and sees a tall hooded figure standing over her. She looks around, and she's basically in a huge underground catacomb in her basement. There's a person chained to an altar across from her with runes etched in their stomach, and it's Ezra.
Aw, Ezra. Dang, caught astray.
There's snakeskin everywhere, and the person hovering over her lifted their cloak. It's Auntie D, and she says, welcome to the party. We're just getting started. She's like, what the fuck is happening? That's what she's saying. She thinks that there must be a slip in reality because there's no way that her sweet aunt is about to sacrifice her. And Auntie tells her that before she left town the first time, she left before she could be initiated, so they're fixing that today. Auntie also drops a bomb that they know that Ronan is Beatrix's dad, and although he's a Croft, they're not that upset because mating a witch with the demon makes the child incredibly powerful. When Beatrix is of age, she'll be the most powerful witch in generations. So they admitted that they're a family of witches and that Ronan the Crofts are demons.
Oh.
We find out that her aunties knew her mom was trying to right a wrong the day that she died, and she was trying to undo the original spell, but a caster's final spell before death can never be reversed. The ravens that always come after Elijah Croft was because her grandmother casted it before she died to always have him be attacked by ravens. Maven starts crying, and she's like, girl, don't cry just yet. You didn't even hear the best part. Your mom didn't die from trying to undo the curse. She died because she did a foolish thing, and I made sure that she would never be able to make another one. So Auntie D killed her.
Oh, damn.
Auntie starts getting Ezra off while she's telling Maven that their master's almost ready, and when he rises, he will claim his queen to rule beside him. And guess who it is? Beatrix, a child bride.
No!
There's a whole entire sacrifice scene at this part. Like, it's just crazy. But basically, Ezra's killed in the middle of his orgasm, and Q is finger fucking both of his aunties and then just like starts fucking them both. So he's like,
oh my God. Q. Okay.
She quickly knows that she's next for the initiation, and she's like, I don't want to get fingered by Q. Like,
that's fair.
She's panicking, and through all the terror, she hears her name being called. Something with the sacrifice goes wrong because both aunties start screaming and a huge smoky demon is in front of her. He uses his talons to get her free from the altar, but it's not just any demon. It's her demon, Ronan.
Yay!
He roars and lifts them into the sky, getting her out just in time. Ronan is in the hospital with both Beatrix and Maven, both of them one room away. While he's sitting watching Beatrix sleep and holds onto her hand, one of the nurses says someone is here to visit Maven, and he's like, huh? He goes out, and it's his old groundskeeper, Silas Hawthorne. He asks him what he's doing here, and it turns out Silas is Maven's dad.
So they're not brother and sister.
Oh, shit.
Tricked ya.
Wow.
Even though he thought they were when they did.
Yeah. Yeah. He was just going to ignore that.
And he was like, well, my dad never admitted to it. He just kind of let me believe it. So that was really shitty of him. But he was like, meh, dads.
What are you going to do?
Maven wakes up and Ronan goes to see her. We find out they're in the hospital from smoke inhalation and their house got burned down and their aunties did not make it out. Ronan vows to keep her safe and protected, and he loves her with all of his heart. Even though Blackthorns don't marry, he can't wait to put a ring on her finger and have him, her, and Beatrix be one happy family. We're in the epilogue, and it's in her private investigator, Cole Walker's point of view, and he saw the Blackthorn Manor fire on the news. He immediately packed his bags and headed to Solstice. He made his way to the burnt-down house where all the press and cops were and was able to get the tea. It turns out, the reporter says that the fire started from extremely high levels of carbon monoxide in the air. The two that went to the hospital, Maven and Beatrix, had high levels of carbon monoxide poisoning. The doctor who saw Maven recently misdiagnosed it as a virus, but it was actually CO2 poisoning. So she was having hallucinations, dizziness, and nausea, and everything. So like,
damn,
we don't even know at what point in the book was her hallucinations and what was real.
Yeah, because there was a lot of weird shit going on.
Yeah.
Like her aunts were straight up cursing people.
Yeah. And her aunts had the ability, because they're witches, they had the ability to like remove memories. So that's why she, like, no one could remember that she worked and like literally spent her entire life getting a degree. And then they were like,
who are you?
Damn, that's crazy. You don't know what the truth is, but like, you're pretty sure it was a supernatural situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no one even knows if Ronan is a talented, hot, sexy demon or if she was hallucinating the entire thing.
The fox could be Granny. We don't know.
Could be. Okay.
The black-eyed children that Beatrix saw could have been her hallucinating because she was having carbon monoxide poisoning.
So Riley, how many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I liked it a lot. I think I give it 4.
Okay.
I liked it. I liked it.
And do you think Ronan Croft is sexy?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. He's got a way with the words.
He does.
Also, black hair, piercing blue eyes.
Would you trade places with Maven?
Because that one's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, like, maybe. But, like, I would go insane so quickly if I was her.
Yeah.
Absolutely batshit insane. I would make it everyone's problem.
I would never be okay again.
No. I would not survive that.
Well, next week, by popular demand, we are going to be telling Riley all about God of Fury by Rena Kent, and we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about. I cannot even count the amount of times that this book has been requested.
I can't even remember what the fuck God of Malice was about. He's in like a mob, right?
Yeah. They were like at school where it was like half British, half American.
Yeah.
And he like killed people. And then she was like trying to take her life at the cliff. And he's like, I'll save your life if you suck my dick.
Oh, I remember that. And Jenna was like, ah. So this one, God of Fury, it says, I'm taken by a beautiful nightmare. And I already know, because the girlies spoiled a little bit of this, but I already know it's a boy book.
Boys.
I think, and it does say it's a college romance, so I think they're going to be in college. And I think one of them is going to be like in the mafia mob type thing, you know? One of them's like a real bad boy. Then the other guy, he's not. But he, like, gets wrapped up into it and into their, like, mess. And so he, like, tags along with this other guy. And they have eyes for each other. They're having eyes. And then they just, you know, develop a relationship. But it's kind of weird at first because they're like, whoa, unexpected. And then something crazy big is going to happen. There will be no third act breakup. There will be a happy ending. How do you do?
Something big happens.
I had to be vague on this one. It's harder for me to do these. I feel like when we do a sequel book, they're like always harder for me. I don't know why.
That's fair. Well, we'll find out next week. And thank you, JT Geisinger, for letting us read this book early and for hanging out with us.
There was a lot of detail in the book, too. So we definitely recommend checking it out and reading it, because we had to leave a lot of stuff out because this episode would have been 1,000 minutes long.
Yes.
Hours.
We'll see you guys next week. We're so happy to be back.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at @SmutUpAndListenPodcast and on TikTok at @SmutUpAndListen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.